Congratulations. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
I'm a little under the weather, but what's kept me from going fully under the weather is all the listener feedback we've received this week.
Did we get a lot?
We sure did.
Did you get some answers to the quiz?
Okay, congratulations. We got two winners this week.
Let's repeat the question. The question was about...
Where did Bay Area Chinese-American queer painter Bernice Bing move to when she left San Francisco?
I got it right.
To head out to the country. It was in Mendocino County, but you didn't say the name of the town, Maysoon.
I know, but I texted you, dude.
You can't answer the trivia.
Remember, I texted you and you said, you can't answer it.
Don't answer it, Maysoon. The answer was Philo, California.
Yes.
Philo. Thank you so much to Greg Pond. Big winner of the week.
Did he have any stories about...
A ton of information about Philo.
Tell us. I was just going to ask, did he give us any weirdo information about the town itself?
He sure did.
What does he know about
it? It's only got 349 people.
It's kind of in the Anderson Valley, which is sort of like the alternative wine valley.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Near Napa, but not Napa.
He really sent us a great email.
Can you give us a little more? Taste
I just wanted to thank you for your podcast and all you do. You have helped me through tough times.
Oh, there we go. Did he put that in quotes?
No.
He should have put that in quotes.
Like when I had to relight the pilot light on my water heater, helping my uncle lose weight, chapstick addiction, erectile dysfunction,
shit.
Standing in line at the DMV, and mostly when my cat was going through depression.
Oh, fuck.
Thank you, Greg, for answering our thing. So I guess we got to do a...
He didn't say what he wanted. He didn't want to... Does he want a voicemail message?
No, let's just do it.
Congratulations.
You've reached Greg's voicemail. Leave a message and he'll call you back.
All right. We love you.
This has been Kate Rhodes of Maysoon Wazwaz of Congratulations Pine Tree. Okay, well.
There we go. There's your message.
So there have been a joke or something in there?
Ready.
Well, okay, Maysoon, we got a little bit of questions from listener Mara. I'm not going to say her last name to protect her identity.
Okay, that sounds good.
What advice do you have for young/emerging artists in the Bay Area who are trying to get into show/build relationships with artists/galleries, i.e., how do you actually go about getting your work into places?
I think that's a question for you, Kate.
As many specific details as possible would be helpful.
Please wear this item of clothing whenever you leave the house.
Well, wow. I think people focus sometimes too much on the real higher ups, you know, the like grab for the stars.
The
they want to go get Larry Gagosian for a visit or something, or whoever. You know, Neil Benezra or whoever.
He doesn't, they're not making those decisions for the most part.
Right.
Anyhow.
You know what I'm saying? Like the, you know, top dogs.
Yeah.
But really, I think most of your opportunities are going to come from people like right about your same level. Like somebody who just, if say you're just coming out of like undergrad or grad school or whatever, find curators that just graduated or other artists that just graduated that want to put a show together join up with. I think that's a common mistake. Be friendly to everyone always. Right?
The common mistake is not being friendly?
Yes.
Oh, why would you not be friendly?
Because people think they're like hot shit and they think they're too good for everyone.
You said it.
What else, Maysoon?
I think that's pretty good.
There's
advice
always
right there.
Open calls.
Yeah, definitely, you know, get into those juried shows. I know they don't pay a lot. Sometimes you have to pay. All that sounds super annoying, but in reality, oftentimes
it's a great stepping stone.
And it's also a great way for people to see your work. And part of being an emerging artist is getting people to see your work, because those people, there are lots of people who are also curating shows.
Yeah.
For their small spaces or, you know, whichever.
And I'm talking shit about people inviting in Neil Benezra. And don't do that. Who cares about him? But don't be afraid to invite people in that you respect.
To your exhibition.
But don't expect to your exhibition, for a studio visit, whatever. But don't do it with like high expectations that it's going to like immediately lead to something.
Yeah.
And go out. Go to shows and go to galleries. And people that run spaces want to work with people they feel like give a shit about the space that they organize.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think you're going to get a show somewhere that you've never stepped foot into.
Yeah, don't do that.
Duh.
Do your research. I used to always, when I worked at Stoics, used to always tell artists this, you know, like, look, do your research into the galleries you're interested in. Like, find out what they're showing, what their mission statement is. Do you, like, if you do video and they never show video, maybe it's not the right fit. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not a great example, but like, just do your research, look at past shows, try to get a sense of what their aesthetic or what their interests are, and see if that seems to fit with what you're doing. Because if it doesn't, it's likely not a good fit. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means it's not a good fit.
Yeah. And take it all in stride, because you're going to get rejected a lot.
Yeah.
Roads are going to dead end on you a lot. You're going to get sick.
That's okay. A really good one.
Was that good advice? Probably not.
I think it was okay. There's no solid way to do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you have to find your own way.
And a lot of it is just pure luck.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. Okay. We got literally a page of questions from Conrad.
Oh, Conrad, we
Conrad,
love you.
We're going to have to... Let's split it up.
We need those questions for other episodes.
We're going to respond to those next week. And we're going to do our faking it conversation next week. We lied last week. But this week we've got a hot, hot interview for you. It's a great one. Also, we're going to be at freaking Untitled Art Fair. Are we? I don't really understand
what's
going on.
We're going to be there on Thursday's going to be too late. So we're going to be there
Saturday?
Sunday.
Sunday. Okay, we're going to be there Sunday. So you have time to listen to this and come on out.
At 4 or 4:30.
At like some kind of time. Talking to Zulfikar Ali Bhutto and Yaz Ahmed. Before we talk to you about the project that you just got the alternative exposure grant for, we kind of wanted to get to know each of you individually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't mind talking about your own practice.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So I am Zulfikar Ali Bhutto. A little bit about me. I'm an artist, performer, curator, and drag queen. Under the name Faluda Islam. Mm. And I'm Pakistani, Lebanese, Iranian descent. I came here to the Bay Area about, you know, touching on 4 years ago. A lot of my work in general actually deals with the sort of meetings between Islam, South Asianness, Arabness, and queerness, and how that manifests, how that looks, how that can be explored. A lot of my visual work is actually textile based, and also rooted in the archive, print based, textile based, as are my performances, very multimedia, very much rooted in researching the archive, resuscitating the archive, trying to find where our faults lie in the archive, but also where our collective memory should be resuscitated, and it should remind us of a greater collective self, or of a more celebrated collective self, especially in the context of Islam.
I saw a project you did where you like reappropriated these pages from an Arnold Schwarzenegger like workout book.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That was a project I've recently sort of come to peace with. But I just very recently I've started on something a little bit different. But that project was called Musulman Muscleman. Musulman is it's actually also Spanish. It's Spanish, Arabic, Urdu for the word Muslim. Usually Muslim man, because Muslima is a woman, yeah. But yeah, and muscle man, of course, is muscle man. So it's kind of a pun on those words. And it was a book I found in a secondhand market in Lahore, a city in Pakistan, a very beautiful city. And they have these secondhand book markets where you can find books that are 200 years old. And older, that are sort of bound and taped together. And I mean, it's really interesting. Plus other stuff like this, which was this book from that was published likely in the late 70s. The original, quote unquote original, was written by Arnold Schwarzenegger. But I haven't actually been able to find an original. So it was kind of a pirated mishmash, and it was all translated into Urdu. And the Urdu script takes from the Arabic script. And I sort of repurposed these pages and intervened in the muscles and the body specifically with embroidery, with flowery fabrics, it was kind of a process of revealing. It felt very medical, like these books started to become sort of medical books, revealing the flowers behind the muscles, revealing the femininity behind the masculinity, the softness behind the hardness. And the Urdu script, it was interesting to show to an audience here, which is actually where it started, and versus showing it to an audience in Pakistan, which I've also done, is how here it was sort of, people were almost baffled by the Urdu and Arabic script with these bodies, because I think we're so saturated with that particular kind of script meaning a very particular kind of thing, in the context of the global war on terror, in the context of all these things, where sort of very mundane language, instructional language, very mundane, boring instructional language becomes highly symbolic of a certain kind of community and a certain kind of politics, which I thought was interesting. Whereas in Pakistan, obviously, it was taken for what it was, this sort of, not necessarily for what it was, but for another level of just sort of exploring masculinity and femininity and things like that. Whereas here it took on something quite interesting. Yeah, that was that project.
Okay, yes.
So my name is Yaz Ahmed. I am, what am I? I answer this question 16 different ways depending on the day you ask. so today on Wednesday, I am multiracial, Arab. I am Yemeni, Somali, German, and Lebanese. And I first moved to the Bay Area, gosh, almost 18 years ago now, as a little gaby and 19 years old, but was raised mostly in the Rust Belt. So this is my curatorial debut. Apart from literary events, I'm a writer in terms of craft, and I've been writing since I could scribble, and it's has saved my life over and over. And I think as a writer, you know, I've heard and believe that we should write what we know, and so a lot of what I do write, it's short fiction, poetry, prose. It is, you know, somewhat autobiographical or reflective of themes that I navigate as a genderqueer multiracial person. And a lot of it has to do with diaspora, hyphenated identity is actually some of the themes that are really evoked in the Third Muslim exhibition, which I know we'll get into in a little bit. As I've gotten older, my art has also become a political home for myself in ways, and I love that the quote that I'm totally going to paraphrase because this is not a quote, but that the role of the artist is to make the movement irresistible. And I think right now, kind of socially engaged art and art that really invites us to re-examine concepts and relationships and make meaning in new ways is what really kind of moves and inspires me and sort of what feels very kind of resonant with my current work.
Right on. Did the kind of queer history of the Bay Area, did that factor into you moving here at all?
You know, it didn't actually. Not the queerness. I feel like anywhere I've gone has just become very queer for me because I was there. I'm a first-generation college student in my family of origin, and the college I went to had a cooperative education curriculum where you would study for a trimester, and then you would do an internship related to your field of major, and you had to complete 5 of those to graduate. And so I came here to complete my last internship for my undergrad degree, and just kind of, you know, San Francisco is a different place in 2000 than it is now. But I kind of fell in love with it and, you know, then discovered Oakland not too long after. And, you know, that's been home. Yeah, I think there was definitely a queering that felt resonant, I guess, for me. But so maybe it didn't compel me to come here, but compelled me to stay, I think, for sure.
So we're excited to hear about the show that you're creating with that's going to be opening at Stomart soon, called The Third Muslim, Queer and Trans Narratives of Resistance and Resilience. Great title.
And that opens on January 25th. Reception 6 to 9.
Yeah. That's a very nice plug.
I wanted to also specifically ask if you could talk about the use of the word third.
Okay. Totally.
For our listeners who may not know how that's being used, just to make sure to touch on that.
Oh my God, we can talk about that all day and all night.
I think there are certain words, obviously, and there's certain words and certain numbers that in different cultures, different spaces can be very weighted and have a lot of meaning. And I think in this case, third has a lot of meaning for us in the sense that it represents not just a third way of looking at something, but a different way of looking. We work very much in binaries, especially here in the so-called West or in the Anglo-Saxon world. And, you know, it's not just male and female, and it's not just good and bad, but it's also within the realm of the stereotype of the Muslim, or the practicing Muslim, the Muslim person, the Muslim as an individual, especially within mainstream media. And even out, I mean, it trickles down to a lot of places, but there's this idea that there's a moderate Muslim and there's an extreme Muslim, extreme slash radical. And that we are often viewed with that lens, and we're often seen with that lens. And if you're not in the sort of extreme or moderate category, and if you feel like you don't define yourself in that way, then somehow, especially within the gaze of the West, you're somehow out of Islam, that your identity somehow is in conflict with Islam. But when we use the word the third Muslim, we're talking about a third way of seeing Islam, a third way of practicing Islam, a third way of owning Islam, but also a third way of seeing queerness, another way of seeing queerness, multiple ways. You know, we go 1, 2, 3 and beyond, you know? And it's just another way of seeing queerness as well, because also queerness is not a monolithic identity. Queerness is not just the LGBT or the LGBTQAII, you know, I mean, it's all the letters of the alphabet. And, you know, we're talking about a different way to embrace a different kind of queerness and a different kind of way of seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I talk about queer and trans Muslims as communities that exist within the margins of the margins. And, you know, similar to kind of the multitudes, I think, around identity and experience that Zulfia was referencing, I think this the naming of this was extremely intentional, and I think, again, is another way of inviting folks to kind of re-examine either commonly held beliefs or, in a lot of ways, stereotypes that we have about the ways that we understand and sort of the viewfinder we look through, seeing, like, Islam as monolithic or queerness as Western or as white or as cisgender or as able-bodied or these other sort of lenses that we may look through and not even necessarily be aware that that is what is informing our views, our biases, like, and the ways that we make meaning of things. And so there's also something about it that for me is like, so there's this Islamic concept of ittihad, which is mm-hmm. like a very kind of crudely, I think, interpreted as like it's a very deep and ongoing critical thought and praxis, really kind of like a deep spiritual kind of reflection and examination as well. And so there's something that is also resonant about that for me, about the kind of the invitation to kind of reframe or sort of, you know, see queer and trans Muslims standing in their full dignity and power without defense or explanation. Because it's complexity because it exists and this is it. So that's a... I think it was a very beautiful name, and it was Zulfie who kind of brought that lens, I think, and brought that, you know, how do we make that explicit and lift it up in a very sort of beautiful and simple way. And so that's kind of how the name came about. Yeah.
Thank you.
You couldn't see, but he just curtsied.
Yeah, I did. And jiggled a little bit.
So who's in the show?
Who is in the show? We have, it's huge. like, you know, it's a big space, but it's huge in the sense that we're still trying to digest what we've gotten into, I think.
I think what's really exciting about it, well, when months ago, this has been 18 months in planning almost, and mm-hmm. different from the point of, I think, conception to really... But that was one of the first things I said to Zulfie. I was like, it's so much, it's massive. How are we going to fill it? And the exhibition has 14 different participating artists from across the country and a few international countries as well. And then there are three if you count the opening reception, but public events that are kind of companion events alongside as the exhibition is open. And those include additional performers and panelists. And so all told, we have about 20 different artists.
Should we shout out the dates and times?
Yes.
Awesome. Love that.
So there's Queering Islam, a conversation mm-hmm. on Thursday, February 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the closing reception and performance.
It is actually on the 17th. It's February 17th from 1 to 4 p.m. That features Coming Out Muslim Radical Acts of Love, which is a storytelling performance by Tana Hamida and Wazina Zandan. So they're kind of coming in to perform that live, and there'll be a talk back with the artist after. The panel that happens on the 8th is featuring folks from intersections of faith, fashion, and kink.
Wicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have mm-hmm. opening remarks from one of the first out queer imams in the country, who is Imam Dayi Abdullah. He is an elder, he is a force unto himself, but has touched a lot of different movements, including the queer men's movement, the queer black men's movement here in San Francisco in the 70s, work in Detroit, and really has just a breadth of experience. Parisa Parnian, who is a fashion designer and lifestyle consultant, who is also a faux queen in the late 90s and early 2000s, just post 9/11, when faux queens were not really a thing. She'll be on the panel, as well as Ali Mushtaq, who is the first out, to my knowledge, mm-hmm, right, to our knowledge,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Queer Muslim, Mr. Long Beach Leather,
2016.
2016, but also kind of speaking to his experiences in the kink community. And yeah. The reason we kind of went about composing it that way is, again, it's really looking at how people are building community and making meaning in spaces where they've had to kind of create the path as they've walked it. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, hey, like, how do we... What a great opportunity to kind of invite folks who are making art in not traditional disciplines, or in ways that maybe we wouldn't necessarily kind of construct. And then Zulfi can talk all about the exhibition, because okay. I've been talking in my own minute.
No, that was great. That was great. Thank you. It's interesting, we exist on the margins within the margins, but we have our own, like with any sort of, I guess, I hate using this word, but maybe niche, I don't know, but any community that exists within these margins, we have our own sort of celebrities or people that we look up to, or people that are that we find interesting. And from to the best of my knowledge, I really started getting into this practice of looking at queerness and Islam and those intersections, you know, around 2013, 2014, when I was just moving to the Bay. And my art practice was originally not focused on that, but it was definitely something that was sort of just starting to come in. And it was at that point I started noticing other Muslims who are working in those intersections. And the first person I remember was Samra Habib, who's in the exhibition as well. And somebody had forwarded me a Tumblr and an article on their project called Just Me and Allah, which were, it's a whole project series, ongoing project series of photographs, portraits, very straightforward portraits, very beautiful, straightforward portraits of queer and trans Muslims across the world. I think she even took a trip to Pakistan recently. I'm not really sure. But definitely from the US, Canada, Europe, very much a diasporic experience, very much speaking to the breadth of the community, you know, going beyond just this narrative of like, oh, like, you know, if they exist in Europe or the US or Canada, they must all be, you know, immigrants from the past 50 years. And I think, Yaz, you pointed this out in a conversation the other day, and that, you know, the first Muslims in this country were black folks, you know?
Enslaved black people,
yeah, who were brought here. So, you know, I think that series, I mean, it doesn't necessarily point to that, but it definitely points to the fact that this is not, this is bigger than what we think it might be. And then other, you know, a few other artists came into mind as well. There's Sabah Taj, there's Jamil Halu, there's Kian Abadani, there's Nabila Vega. I mean, there's all these people that sort of were working and had a spotlight for a while. But then we also wanted to see, like, who hasn't had this spotlight? Who hasn't been able to get their work out there? So we sent out a call, kind of like, ooh, will we get anything? And we did, you know, and we increased our base from, like, 5 people, or maybe even less, when we first applied for the curatorial residency, to 14.
We're actively fundraising to pay all of the exhibiting artists as well, because no one should work for free, and this is all incredible labor and time and voices. Like Zulfi had referenced, you know, a lot of these stories are ones that are traditionally silenced to folks, and I think, again, part of that, like, mainstream narrative, but even something that we see play out within queer and trans Muslim community, is that there's often, like, there's kind of an Arabization of it, or there's, like, a very South Asian, it's very kind of dominant in one particular kind of cultural orientation, and the fact is that there are so many folks coming from so many different walks of life, and you know, issues that may seem contemporary now have been issues that have endured and touched community members within this within these communities for a long time, such as police and state violence and anti-blackness and colorism and ableism and all of these things that may not necessarily be at the forefront of even queer and trans Muslim voices. So it's an interesting sort of like unearthing or sort of unveiling that's going to happen by this exhibition. So check it out.
Yeah,
come join us.
Do.
Did you have the idea for the exhibition and then you were trying to find a space to stage it, or... Were you already working with SOM Arts when you applied for the Altex grant and all that stuff?
Yes. When we applied for the Altex grant, we were. So the origin of the show itself, I think, was several years in the brain, you know, several years in the making. I think for both of us, sort of trying to find community in different ways, and especially, you know, Yaz being a writer and me being sort of more visual, on the visual side of the art world, visual performance. It was, you know, we were thinking about like this was the way we worked in the world. So for us, like, how do we creatively bring our community together? How do we creatively find community? How do we creatively organize in a way that we find effective for us? And it was something that I wanted. I remember sort of having an exhibition to curate was something that I was trying to do. And I remember I approached one or two galleries to see who'd be interested. And there was kind of, you know, sort of, excuse the pun, radio silence, I guess, on one or two people. And it was, but you know, it wasn't, I don't think it was out of malice. It was just, you know, every exhibition, every gallery, every place has like a million things going on. So just by chance, actually, I saw SOM Arts curatorial residency, The Call. Nobody really forwarded it to me. Nobody, you know, it was like this very sort of, it just happened to appear on my radar. I was actually just looking for things to, you know, apply for in general, show my art to the world, jobs, etc. And I saw this. And so Yaz and I had already been friends for a little while, actually.
Just a few months,
yeah.
Oh, that's a big commitment.
Yeah, I know. And I was... But I mean, already, I think our friendship was feeling very, felt good. And it feels good. And
we're on the air, you better say that.
Yeah. So, I mean, even at the time, I was like, I can't, you know, I want, you know, I called Yaz, we had a meeting, we had coffee, and I said, this is a thing I found. I would love to work collaboratively with you. Yeah, let Yaz take on from that.
Yeah, I mean, it was very serendipitous in a lot of ways, and even the timing of when we initially we applied to the curatorial residency program, and then were discovered that it had in fact been awarded. At that time in my life, I had just stepped away from an organization I helped co-found, which is Masjid, the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity. And so for me, that had really been a lot of that kind of building community, or really, you know, making connections in ways that felt kind of meaningful and resonant. And so I was looking for a way to still stay connected to themes of queer and trans community, but this opportunity to really integrate that with artistic practice and looking at that was just like, personally, it was just a really lovely kind of, you know, kind of dovetailed timing wise. And so the past year or so, we've been planning this actively, and with the alternative exposures opportunity, you know, that really was an invitation for us to take a lot of the core concepts and sort of structure of the Third Muslim and bring it to the East Bay. And that's really what the focus is going to be. It will be an abbreviated sort of exhibit, but more kind of locally rooted and really, again, kind of drawing upon Oakland and the East Bay community, because this is very San Francisco focused, and although the artists are from all over, obviously.
So wait, there's going to be another show?
Yeah.
That's actually what we're using the alternative exposures grant.
Yeah. So it's,
it won't be of the same scale.
It won't be the, and we're also, I mean, it's, we're also brewing So it is going to be the same. The reason why it's a smaller scale is because with this grant, where we have the opportunity now to brew what the next steps will look like in terms of how we want to document this, how we want to maybe archive this. You know, we're sort of brewing ways in which we feel like there's going to be a logical next step, but we don't really want to talk too much about that yet. Oh, so okay. We want to keep it a bit of a secret.
But wait, so do you know where that's going to be located?
The exhibit, we do not, because realistically, the version, the next kind of exhibit will be happening in early 2019. So that it's a 1 year kind of mark from the original iteration of this. We have a commitment to having it in Oakland, probably with a local gallery. We are in conversation with a couple spaces, but nothing is firmly kind of planted. And we will be doing another very kind of targeted kind of look for local artists to really kind of feature in this as well, even more so than they are in the San Francisco version.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think it also gives us an opportunity to keep exploring these themes. We have a year now, you know, we have another year now to sort of explore how these themes can be expressed creatively, artistically. Mm-hmm. And through every other means. I mean, what's interesting is that we're actually, you know, I think it's kind of great that the inception of this project, The Third Muslim, which we definitely see, we can definitely see its longevity in some way, you know, especially now with the Alternative Exposures Grant, is that it's exciting that it opens with an art show. It opens with an exhibition. It opens with artists and activists. I feel like this movement is inherently political. And it talks about politics of the body. It talks about a politics of space. It talks politics of claiming space. And then you can take it many other ways. And it's kind of what we feel like is sort of this doorway is through art.
Kate and I often ask collaborators what
it's like. Because we collaborate.
We're collaborators. Mm-hmm.
And we're just locked in Mortal Kombat.
We are not.
OMG.
But we like to ask, you know, other collaborators how guys have figured out how to work with one another, since you're new collaborators.
I love collaborating, and definitely through collaborating, I have learned who can I collaborate with and who can I not. But when I do think about my collaborators, I think about them wisely. And I think that's probably the first step in collaboration, is think about your collaborators wisely and think about the people you want to work with wisely. And then after that, we trust each other. We trust that, you know, whatever, we can take executive decisions and they'll work out. And those decisions that we feel like maybe we can't take executively or we're not sure about, then we trust that we'll let each other know about them. You know, I mean, we talk a lot, Yaz and I, and we're in constant communication. And I think we perhaps both have a similar way of sort of communicating. It's like, this needs to happen. We're going to do that. This needs to happen. And it's sort of this back and forth that keep on happening, so that when we make decisions, we're not trying to be unwise about those decisions.
I think for me, when I collaborate creatively with someone, it can either be life-giving or crazy-making or some combination therein.
I don't know what I've done, actually.
Well, I think what, you know, we didn't know each other well. Like, we didn't have this, like, longevity, you know, our history.
A few months.
Yes, for the folks in the back, 2 months, I think... But it's really a gut check for me. It was, you know, how do we share space together? How do we hear each other? How do we see each other? And all of those were positive flags for me. So it's like, all right, let's do this together. And, you know, I think because neither of us is new at it, but we do have different disciplines and we have very different work styles. Mm-hmm. Like, we had that conversation kind of up front, you know, talk about roles clarification. Let's talk about, like, you know, what do you feel is a learning curve for you? What do you feel you're really strong at? What do you feel, you know, is tense for you? What do you like in conflict?
That was meeting number two. In fact, we have it in our notes.
We do. Yeah. We do. Because it's all relational, right? Like, it's all relational. And so that felt really important. But there's also a lot that's like, there's just very simpatico. Like, we are both big on documenting. We're both big on, like, you know, consensus building even, and but like honesty, like can there, we're gonna lock horns about that, cool, let, talk to me about how you got there, like, but ultimately can you live with this, can I live with that, like what are the no, the deal breakers and what aren't, so
the getting, non-negotiables,
exactly, exactly, no, and totally, really like totally. How are we making decisions, especially now that we're in execution mode, there's a really high volume of decisions, sometimes strategic, sometimes tactical, we have to make really quickly, how do we do that in a, from a values-based place? How do we do that in a way that we're not throwing out the agreements of accountability that we spent so much time formulating together,
for sure,
you know, out the window just because of time or urgency? And that feels good to be able to take care of each other in ways or like to trust that, like, you know, I trust that Zulfi is mindful of things that, you know, maybe because he sees me sitting on his shoulder, or he's like, or his lovely unicorn self is sitting on my shoulder. Like, what would Zulfi say?
I think about that about
and
you
then
too.
And 2 seconds later, often. You get a WhatsApp message asking you, Zulfi, what would you say?
What would you say? And then 2 seconds later, I reply to it. And I think, and it's also, I mean, it's been a huge learning process. I think you're, as you said, like, you know, you work differently, but also your skill set is very different. And especially, you know, especially sort of there's things that we encounter that sometimes I'm like, and Yaz is like, and then we solve it, you know, and I think,
and vice versa.
Like, I think there's, you know, I think that's also part of collaborating is skill sharing. I mean, I think let's not forget that resource sharing, skill sharing. I mean, and we need those as artists, as writers, as artivists.
We always like to ask our interviewees at the end of an interview, is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
I love dolphins, one. And I also, I don't know if you can tell, I love unicorns. And I consider myself a queer Muslim unicorn drag queen.
My longest relationship has been with my furry pudding cat of 17 years. I've had her since she was 6 weeks old.
OMG.
So I'm just going to put that out there as something else I'd like you to know. And also, make sure you go to somarts.org/thirdmuslim to find out all of the exhibition details. And also to check out our Indiegogo so that we can pay artists for their work.
Oh, donate. Thank you so much for talking to us. Today. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Our pleasure. Yeah.
And as always, congratulations. All right, Maysoon, let's remember for next week. We're faking it. Listener questions. That's it. Okay?
And you're going to feel better.
And I hope to feel better with the dearth of holistic medicinal options.
So much advice. Take so this. Do that.
So much.
Do this.
It's
don't
all
do
about
that.
Elderberry.
Oh, I don't know about any of that. I'm like the old-fashioned hot water with lemon, a little bit of honey, lots and
no
lots
honey,
and lots
that's
of
sugar, man.
Honey.
Okay, and we'll be seeing you next week from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations Pine Tree. Pine Tree.